Whilst democratic governments don't sit down and think about competing at being good at democracy, we can actually rank them in a plausible competitive order. It worries me that annually the Lowy Institute survey shows that a significant number of Australians aren't that hot on democracy. They'd really rather live in a country that was economically strong than a democracy if that was the choice they faced. It frightens the hell out of me that they think that. Democracies are important, and I wonder if the Lowy will ask next time, would you like to live in an autocracy or a theocracy? Because I'm sure the answer to that will be, no, I would not. Fortunately, we've got people around the world who are watching closely what's happening with democracies because, you know, once you become one, you don't necessarily stay in a perfect position. People can get in charge and give themselves more power. There can be uprisings. You know, history just keeps on making history. Joining us now to talk about democracy and how it's going is Larry Diamond. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. And he's written an article, The Long Freedom Slump. Larry Diamond, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, Larry, there's good news and bad news, isn't there?
Yes, there is always some of both.
Yes, sadly, that's the case. Well, let's start with the good news.
The good news is that if you look at the numbers, the gross numbers, there's not been any kind of collapse in the number of democracies in the world. It's still the case that a little over 50% of all the countries in the world, and if you want to look at it this way, in particular, the countries in the world over 1 million population, meet the test of democracy. About a third of the states in the world meet a higher test of liberal democracy, that is, they don't just have free and fair elections. They have a pretty strong rule of law and protection for individual rights, as people do in Australia, New Zealand, the United States, but also Taiwan and Korea. The bad news is that freedom and democracy have been slipping back in the world. And we've got, you know, a trend now that's been going on for about a dozen years of erosion in levels of freedom and democracy in the world.
I had never heard of the tiny nation of Comoros. Can you tell me where it is or was?
Comoros are an island nation off the African coast in the Indian Ocean. And, you know, it's a pretty small country that kind of moves back and forth between democracy and autocracy.
And what about Armenia and Malaysia? What's been happening there? You cite them as being two examples.
Well, in each case, these are countries that have been longstanding autocracies dominated by ruling parties and fairly corrupt elites that have been in power for a long time in Malaysia since independence around 1960. But in each case, corruption was the undoing of the longstanding dominant non-democratic party. In the case of Malaysia, you know, there was this financial scandal surrounding Prime Minister Najib Razak called the 1MDB scandal, because that's the bank he used and the investment vehicle to launder hundreds of millions of dollars out of the Malaysian financial system and into his own personal bank accounts and those of his allies and his party and his cronies and so on, a scheme that ultimately defrauded Malaysia, it is believed, of over $1 billion, for which he's now being prosecuted. And corruption had just gotten to the point where Malaysians were fed up, and the old rivals in Malaysia, Anwar Ibrahim, the longtime oppositionist, and Mahathir Mohamad, who had been the prime minister of Malaysia under this dominant political coalition for some two decades, they joined forces and defeated the ruling alliance, the Barisan Nasional. So it's a very inspiring story of how people can come together in a situation of abuse of power and reclaim their society and bring about democratic change. Now, Freedom House judges that Malaysia is not yet a full democracy, But it's made a lot of progress in that direction. And similarly, in Armenia, there were mass protests against democracy, and then elections were held, and the ruling party lost. And a much more democratic political figure has been elected as the president of the country. So these are two very important instances where we could see the rise and hopefully entrenchment of democracies where none had existed before.
Mm. And you've got other examples of change of a slightly different nature, both Ecuador and Angola, where leaders who were not the best made, from their point of view, I suppose, a mistake in who they chose to replace them, and better things happening.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting irony, right, that if a leader feels he's got to step down, that the society is no longer willing to abide his kind of sitting on top of power indefinitely, they try and choose someone who they think will be safe, someone who will be a political loyalist. But in each case, the leader was kind of double-crossed. So in Ecuador, the new president has really rolled back some of the illiberal tendencies of President Rafael Correa and created a more open media and a more democratic political system. I'd say Ecuador was veering away from democracy to something we call competitive authoritarianism. And under President Lenin Moreno, I think he's pulled it back, hopefully in a more authentic democratic direction. In Angola, you know, Eduardo dos Santos stepped down from roughly 30 years of ruling in Angola at the helm of one of the most corrupt regimes in the world. And his successor was seen to be a kind of trustworthy political loyalist, but again, hasn't quite worked out that way and has been pulling in some of the monopolization of wealth that the Dos Santos family thought it had secured for itself.
Mm. Now, looking at Africa, which as a continent, I understand by 2050, will have more babies born than are born in India and China combined, and an average age of under 25, so it's a very, very important continent. There are big changes in Ethiopia, and that is one of the most populous countries in Africa, 100 million people. So if changes there took place and bedded themselves, that'd be a hopeful sign, wouldn't it?
It really would be, and you're absolutely right. Ethiopia is the second most populous country in sub-Saharan Africa after Nigeria. 100 million people in the strategically significant Horn of Africa. This is a multi-ethnic country with a lot of divisions, has never been a democracy at any time in its history, but the people are really, again, fed up with authoritarian abuses, with corruption, with concentration of power, with lack of fairness in the distribution of power among the different ethnic groups in the country. And you've had a prime minister come to power, Prime Minister Abiy, who is, I think, trying to propel Ethiopia down a path of democratic reform. So nothing is guaranteed. There are elections down the road that could become the focal point for a transition to democracy, or could fail to live up to the standards of freedom and fairness that qualify a country for democratic status. But certainly Ethiopia is a place of political hope and possibilities now that didn't exist even 2 years ago.
Mm, that's a very, very good sign. I'm talking with Larry Diamond. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. And we're talking about, I suppose, a type of democracy index, how it's going. We've just covered the good stuff. Now we're going to go to the problems. Larry, what are the signs for the downturn? It's never all good news, is it?
No, and really for a number of years now, the more worrisome and discouraging news has, I think, overshadowed the more hopeful news. The overarching bad trend is that every type of regime is trending downwards. So if you start with the liberal democracies like our own in Australia and the United States, we've been dealing with some worrisome pressures. First of all, there in Australia, you've been struggling for some time to come to grips with these inappropriate forms of Chinese influence that have not been really transparent, but that have tried, as Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull said, through means that have been corrupt, coercive, or covert to penetrate the system in ways that would compromise democratic values. I give Australia a lot of credit for the laws it's passed in the last year to try and guard against this. I think we've really got more serious problems in Europe and to some extent in the United States, where we see a very severe backlash against immigration. People are very concerned about job displacement. We've got a falling traditional middle class, and it has fed a lot of illiberal populist pressures on the far right in particular, but increasingly on the more radical left as well. And we'll see what happens in the European Parliament elections that are coming up in May, but we see gathering support for illiberal, nativist, anti-immigrant political parties like the National Front, the United Kingdom Independence Party, the Sweden Democrats, and Alternative for Germany. Then if you look at the electoral democracies, democracies that have not had a strong rule of law and good control of corruption, but nevertheless have been democratic, these countries are at risk of losing democracy altogether. And of course, that's what's happened in Turkey. That's what's happened in Bangladesh. And now, closer to home in Australia, we see a Philippine president, Rodrigo Duterte, who has, you know, arrested his leading journalistic critic, the extraordinary investigative journalist, Maria Ressa, who has purged the Supreme Court, who has presided over more than 10,000 extrajudicial killings of alleged drug traffickers who never got the right to a free and fair judicial trial. You know, increasingly, the rudiments of democracy are under assault in the Philippines, as they have been in some other electoral democracies in the world. Then you look at the regimes that are authoritarian, but at least allowed some space for opposition, again pointing closer to Australia, looking at Southeast Asia. Cambodia would have been an example of a country that was authoritarian, but there was space for an independent press. There was significant opposition in parliament. And after the most recent elections, so-called, in Cambodia, Hun Sen's party has now emerged with every seat in parliament. And it's really a republic of fear at this point, and an absolute kleptocracy of Hun Sen and his family. And then you look at the countries that had no shadow of political pluralism or freedom, China being the most dramatic and important example, and they have become, over the last decade as well, even more authoritarian than they were from the very low starting point they had a decade ago. So now China has hundreds of thousands of Uyghurs in detention and re-education camps. It's arrested virtually all of its human rights lawyers. There's even less scope for free expression than there was. And the Xi Jinping regime is not only pursuing more aggressive ideological indoctrination of its population, but it's setting up this social credit system, which is going to use the pervasive presence of more than 200 million surveillance cameras and the relentless collection of people's digital data to compile a kind of Orwellian portrait of people's behavior, and then to punish people who show any sign of disloyalty to the regime. It's a scary picture that we're looking at. There are a lot of trends in the world that find freedom and respect for human dignity, not to mention democracy, moving in the wrong direction.
Larry, it's In one part, a depressing story. Perhaps we should have had the bad news first. But I'm going to bed tonight, and the last word I'm going to say to myself is Ethiopia. And I think I'll sleep well. Larry Diamond, thanks for joining us on Counterpoint.
Okay, thank you for having me.